Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. What you're about to hear is a quarterly grades podcast where I had the pleasure of sitting down with the great Morris Bankston from Bulls on Tap. Morris is an incredible follow on X. His insights, especially on the Bulls and the team in general, are always spot on. He's knowledgeable, someone I deeply respect in the Bulls community. So in this episode, we break down the key players in a rotation, evaluate their performances so far, and dive into potential trades that the Bulls absolutely need to do. We also touch on Vooch, who has turned his career around this season. Once one of the league's worst three-point shooters, he's now drilling threes at a 40% clip. It's simply amazing. Unfortunately, this resurgence is coming at a time that's going to cause us to win too many games, as we did against the Raptors, as we did on Friday. It's going to jeopardize our shot at a top 10 pick in a loaded draft. And this worst case scenario is coming to fruition. We're going to end up 11th, 12th, or 13th and hand that pick over to the Spurs, courtesy of this DeRozan trade, if we don't move him and or Zach soon. This draft class is just stacked with difference makers. We can't afford to miss this opportunity to be top 10 and get one of these guys in this lottery. So as much as we love seeing the team win occasionally, the time to move is now. Whatever it takes, we got to set ourselves up for the future. So Doug's been on vacation. He's back. So hopefully we'll be able to record an episode this week. But I hope you enjoy this episode I recorded with Morris. But in the interim, I did want to mention one thing. I want to take a moment to talk about Taj, because that guy embodies everything that it means to be Chicago Bull, a player who gave his heart, soul, body to this franchise every time he stepped on the court, a player I will always hold in the highest regard. I love Taj Gibson. What comes to the forefront for me is April 2nd, 2013. I was in D.C. for work, and as luck would have it, the Bulls were in town. I got some insanely good seats, 10 rows off center court for $100. The best seats I've ever had to watch an NBA game. Now, this was the season Derrick Rose was out. Bulls were struggling. Somewhere around 500, if I recall. He had an injury. I think it was an ankle injury that caused him to miss like 10 games in February and March. Well, he wasn't moving well in this game. And in Q2, he hurts his knee. But there was Taj just in excruciating pain. I've never seen a player more clearly battling his own body than Taj Gibson did that night out there just competing in the first half. Just gave it everything he had. 9 minutes and 31 seconds in the first half of total pure grit. He could barely move, but there he was, still out there in the arena fighting for the beloved Bull. I think he left the game at halftime, didn't return. Not only was he done for the night, I think he missed the next 7 games. But watching that, it always struck me, Taj Gibson is the kind of player who will sacrifice everything for his team. And that's where I had issues with Thibodeau as a coach, because as a coach, you have to protect players like that, like Taj, from themselves, because they're warriors and they're going to push through anything no matter what. I saw it the year before when Noah hurt his ankle in the playoff series against the Sixers. He was out there for 5 or 6 minutes afterwards running around like the Tin Man. Should have never been out on the court after that serious injury, which required surgery. I digress. Let's go back to the beginning real quick. Taj Gibson, 26th overall pick in the 2009 draft. I was at Doug Tonis's house for that pick with Big Dave. I still remember the room's reaction for one of these draft parties that we always have. Most of us wanted DeJuan Blair, who was, I think he ended up getting picked in the second round. Yeah, 35 by the Spurs. He was projected to go higher, but he didn't have like any ACLs in his knee, from what I recall, or some incredible red flag knee issue. But boy, were we wrong about that one. Like, Taj Gibson turned out to be one of the best draft picks in Bulls history, period. Even before Tibbs arrived, he was, you know, under Vinny Del Negro, one of the worst coaches we've had. Taj was good. He was first team all rookie. He made himself into an elite rebounder, stellar defender, force in the post, got even better over, you know, next couple of years with Tibbs. He was an absolute cornerstone of, to me, one of the greatest teams in Bulls history. So, you know, I still feel we all know that story. It's an American tragedy. The Bulls didn't win a title with that team due to the injuries, but Taj Gibson will always be one of my favorite Bulls. Like, I hope Bulls fans everywhere feel the same. He deserves an ovation everywhere he goes. Every restaurant he enters in Chicago, and I don't care where it's at, is at the public library, stand up, give the guy an ovation, because, I mean, wherever he shows up, Taj Gibson gave us everything. We should give him everything. Here's to Taj. Warrior, legend, player I'll always remember. I love you, Taj Gibson. Now, on to the show with Morris Bankston. All the best. Thanks for listening. Go Bulls. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. My usual co-pilot, the great one, Doug Tonis, is out on a cruise somewhere in the seven seas. And so for this episode, I'm going to specifically ask Morris Bankston to join us. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Fred. How are you today, man?
Living a dream. And you know what? I'm excited about this year. This is supposed to be a fun, bad season for the beloved Bull. And I think that's exactly what it's been. We've been bad, but there's so much good in terms of, I think Vooch and Levine have actually rehabbed their trade value. And big picture, I think the future is bright if we can get a top 10 pick in this draft, which is just absolutely loaded. What say you?
I completely agree. It's a needle to be threaded by the Bulls front office, right? Because they absolutely need that top 10 pick in the 25 draft. And at the same time, I don't think it's necessarily the bad thing that, you know, there are some wins getting thrown in the mix. You can't do too much winning. It's like, do enough winning to where, like, some foundational things are starting to be developed within the younger guys on that roster, but you got to get that pick.
It is a needle. That's the best way to describe it. I did want to see Zach come back strong. I did want to see Vooch come back. I never in a million years expected him to play like he has been. But, I mean, these are blessings in disguise. Like, these two guys have really performed to the level that, I think, number one, they might be all-stars in the East, and number two, well, now, if you're a team that's contending, I mean, one of these guys could potentially put you over the top. And I do feel like, especially Vooch now, are in position to be traded. Do you feel as strongly as I do that these guys are now going to be able to be moved?
I certainly see, like, you know, where we are today and, you know, and before, like, in preseason, I thought it was going to be a tall task to find any realistic trade movement with either Zach or Vooch. But now, yeah, you see that strong performance that they're bringing night in and night out. And specifically with Vooch, like, it's a complete 180. It's a power, like, you know, he's just had such a powerful transformation, specifically with his shooting, right? To where, you know, it's been like night and day this season. So at least from the standpoint of their performance, I certainly think there should be movement. There should be a market there. The challenge, I imagine, within the market, and like, I'm thinking, you know, our friends over at CHGO, they just had Jake Fisher. One of the things that I thought was interesting within Jake Fisher's sort of follow-up to, like, that big trade bomb he dropped a week or two ago, or however long ago it was, about the Bulls, you know, being open for business, is, you know, those price tags on Vooch and Patrick Williams, for example, and to probably a lesser extent Zach, because everybody's always known about Zach's max. Like, the price tag seems like that might be the challenge with getting movement done.
Unfortunately, the restructured collective bargaining agreement has just made Zach LaVine almost, it's so hard to trade that much money into teams that are already in the first or second apron. And it's next to impossible. And that's what I found frustrating about Acme is, like, now Vooch has played so well that you didn't need to give him that third-year contract. Third year doesn't help. If this was an expiring deal at $20 million, like, he'd be a massive trade chip. He'd be a blue chip. He still has an extra year, which makes it all the more difficult. You know, it's just so frustrating that on the margins, and in some of these negotiations, the Bulls have, in Jake Fisher, and I encourage everyone to go back and listen to that CHGO interview. They did an excellent job. And one of Jake Fisher's comments was to, you know, someone to the extent where he was talking about how they took Williams and they re-signed Williams at a number that, in general, the NBA was, like, looking at who was going to pay that. And he said the same thing in essence about Vooch. So when you're overpaying by $5 million, number one, you keep on doing that for multiple players, well, then you're costing yourself a player who could be paid, or multiple players, in the $10 to $20 million range. And number two, you make it more that difficult to trade because every dollar matters in this environment of essentially a hard cap now. So that's what I just found so frustrating about Acme is, like, even Vooch, this would be a slam dunk, but you had to add that extra year.
And I do think it makes it more difficult for teams to bring him in because of that extra year. What say you?
Completely agree. I listened to that Jake Fisher spot on CHGO. And, we at Bulls on Tap, we also I'll do a quick impromptu plug. We run a daily newsletter called the Bulls on Tap Tasting Flight. I encourage all the Big Red Bus listeners, please check out our daily newsletter. We make a point to try, scour the globe for all of these, insightful things that are happening in the Bulls universe. A lot of people probably expected that Jake Fisher piece to be all about, following up on a lot of the trade rumors he's been reporting, and certainly it was some of that, but you're hitting it on the head, and we Bulls on Tap talked about that in December 11th Tasting Flight newsletter, really keying in on those quotes that Jake Fisher had about the impact of Acme's decisions with, the price points they were willing to give Vucevic and Patrick Williams, and those really turned out to be some very nasty unintended consequences for their motivations now to try to shop those guys. I'll go back to the specific quote we called out in the Tasting Flight from Fisher, where, if his salary was 15 a year instead of 20 a year, I mean, I think, there's an opportunity for him on the market, right? So, Acme shot themselves in the foot. They priced themselves out of a market that they, it's a question of, were they really thinking about their trade market if that was the motivation they had? It's just, I've written multiple pieces really since, the end of last season about Acme, because it's like I have a hard time understanding what is the vision of this front office regime, what is the set of, objectives and how they're trying to connect the dots here, because it just feels like it's very willy-nilly the decisions they make. And they have yet to show me a decision where they factor in long-term consequences beyond the actual transaction they execute.
I agree 100%. I'm still confused what they're trying to do here. I think what they're trying to do is a retool instead of rebuild. And that's just extremely hard to do because, you really need to get very bad. And I think it's possible that if you can move Zach and you can move Vooch, this team is going to look very bad. And I think we will be approaching, bottom seven status, but I mean, that's the issue. You still have a player like Io, you still have Kobe, and I don't think you're going to be bad enough. There's teams that are just worse, and if you're just looking at the math, I just don't see it where we're going to be guaranteed top five pick, which is really what ideally you want to be in this draft. I mean, there's just so many, to me, players that are going to be differentiators going forward, whether it's not just, Cooper Flagg, it's Harper, who I love. And I think it would be an incredible story if he came and joined the Bulls, decades after his dad was a major player in three of the best teams in Bulls history. So
absolutely.
We're at the, past the quarter point of the season. I want to get into quarterly grades a little bit and just brief synopsis of what you would grade each player on this team. And there are some excellent grades here. So let's start out with Zach LaVine, to me, who has just been a revelation, 22.1 points per game, 4.2 assists, 4.4 rebounds. I think his defense has been rock solid as a one-on-one defender, always has issues off the ball on defensive side. But, he's, to me, at 29, playing at an all-star level with an effective field goal percentage of 61%. I mean, 43% from three, just a stellar year on high volume, 7.7 attempts per game. He's playing at an all-star level, and I think we have a tendency, just because of the contract, that he's on a max contract, to discount how good he is as a player. He's an A+ for me. What say you?
I give him an A, I'll say, as a caveat, I'm taking sort of the curve approach with the team, right? It's going to be hard for me to say anybody's an A+ on a team that's like a 10-15 team right now, but I think A for sure. The thing I'll add to those stats you mentioned, I mean, Zach is shooting 63.6 true shooting percentage in this season as well. It's just he's shown that he still has his scoring back without question. And what I've liked about seeing Zach in these first 25 games is I think Zach is in on the mission that, he really needs to showcase how he fits into winning basketball. The Bulls is a roster may not be winning, and that's not completely his fault. It's just, the things that I have paid attention to, you look at some of the two-man dynamic that Zach has developed with Josh Giddey, right? Where There's a good chemistry that they've developed in early in the season where Giddey continues to find Zach on these baseline cuts from the corner. That's just like, I think that's something where, you know, franchises that obviously have a better structured roster compared to the Bulls playing defense have a solid point guard that, you know, is probably a more well-rounded point guard than Giddey. Like, they should be paying attention to that, because here, like, the knock on Zach used to be that he's a ball hog, he couldn't contribute to winning, but you've got off-ball Zach now, highly efficient. Like, that can't go unnoticed.
This could have easily gone south. Obviously, there were issues last year. I thought what happened this offseason was front office malpractice with the quotes that were given to Jamal Collier at ESPN from someone inside the front office about, you know, him just kind of discounting Zach LaVine, calling him a loser, essentially. It could have really gone south, and he could have pulled a Harden. He didn't do that. He's been nothing but a professional. He went out, it sounds like, and him and Joe Cowley kind of like mended their relationship. Like, the guy is a good dude, a good kid, who I think is just really unfairly maligned in this city, and it's been that way for his entire tenure here. So I love the kid. I'm glad he's doing well, and I wish him the best. Like, I think the Lakers should be all over him, but, you know, I don't know the situation. I'm still confused about this collective bargaining agreement. I don't even know if that's realistic for the Bulls to make a trade with them, because they don't have many draft assets, you know. So is there a realistic trade, do you know, with the Lakers for Zach LaVine? Is there something that they could do? Don't they have to match dollar for dollar? I believe so, since they're in that ape.
I'm going to stall as I look at SpotRack for that, but I seem to recall that the Lakers are very much an apron team. So depending on whether it's first or second apron, the Lakers may not have an ability to even, like, do anything other than a one-for-one swap. And so for all practical purposes, you know, the Lakers probably should be considered a second apron team. According to SpotRack, currently the Lakers have $30,000 in second apron space. So any move they make, you know, if it probably has to be, yeah, you can have those limitations. I mean, seems like they can't really play with anything other than sort of mid-level exception deals to try to take in, because that it goes back to Max, you know, unfortunately Zach's contract, and that's an albatross, financially speaking, in terms of making a deal happen, it seems like.
Let me just get it on tape right now. This collective bargaining agreement sucks. It's going to significantly hinder player movement. I don't think that's good for the league. I don't think it's good for the Bulls, most importantly, because we have, you know, Zach and other players that we'd like to move and start a rebuild on, or retool, whatever the front office wants to call it, and we're hindered by it because of so many restrictions that are keeping player movement at a minimum. So, as an aside, let's move on to Coby White. Coby White, what's your grade for 24-year-old Coby White, who's averaging 18.1 points per game, 87% from the free throw line, from three he's shooting 37%. What say you?
Yeah, Kobe's been interesting this season because, you know, last season, you know, probably both of us would agree, yeah, Kobe should have been the NBA most improved player. It seems like it's been somewhat of a herky-jerky. I'm just going on what I've seen on the court with Kobe, because, I mean, the numbers probably say a more positive picture, but I've seen games with Kobe where it's been kind of like up and down. And my point of view on that, I think there's still some discovery in terms of like Kobe's next phase. And it's like, it seems like Kobe has had this annual experience of like, he has to take on some sort of new aspect of a role or new dynamic in the role. And what I liked about Kobe last season, as he was going through like that MIP campaign, you saw that great sort of chemistry that Kobe developed with DeMar DeRozan, where he was a big beneficiary of DeMar DeRozan's ball gravity, right? Every time DeMar was getting a double, Kobe was there to be the outlet, and not gonna lie, amazing points. It's different this season where we keep seeing Kobe in these driving kick scenarios, which I don't know if that's necessarily the best aspect of his game. In a lot of ways, it seems like this desire to, you know, speed up the pace is sort of, it's taking Kobe out of his game, out of the game that he established for himself last year, where I thought he became a very competent ball handler and was able to find some opportunities within pick and roll with like Vooch, and then again just being able to play off DeMar, where like that dynamic isn't there this year, and it feels like Kobe's still trying to fill out what he's accomplishing. So for me, I'm giving Kobe at this point of the season, I'm giving him a C because I think he's having a slow start, and ideally I want to hope that he improves that to where, yeah, he gets back to a higher level where, you know, I think Kobe could easily be an A player, but just what I've seen on the court so far, I have to be like, I just feel like I have to be objective about it. Like, he's got some things he needs to work out.
There's no player in this roster for the last 4 years that's been put in a more difficult position than Kobe White. If you look at it, I think it was Billy Donovan's first year. I mean, or maybe it was his second year. He was asked to be a traditional point guard, which he isn't. He's a combo guard. Asked to serve that role. He did it to the best of his ability. Bulls didn't like it, and they looked out for other solutions essentially every year. Last year, he kind of had a completely different role after Zach's injury, where he was almost like a primary ball handler, scorer, combo guard, you know, always had the ball in his hands. It was either him or DeMar primarily. And I thought he did an excellent job in that role last year. Now, it's again, more different role. Regardless, Kobe White's been asked to do these different roles every year. And in some cases, they are vastly different roles. Like this year, he's playing more off, you know, more two, more off ball with the presence, obviously, of Zach and Giddy. And I think he's excelled for the most part in every role. His passing this year, he's averaging 4.7 assists. I think his passing has been fantastic. His ball handling is great, shooting 87% from the free throw line. The one issue is, you know, he's 37.1% from the 3-point line. I'd just love to see him 1 year hit 40, you know, consistently on high volume. I think he did that once in his career, maybe not. That's the one area where I've been a little bit disappointed, which is with his 3-point shooting. But overall, I love Kobe White, and I think he's going to be a rock-solid player in the future for us. But I do feel like out of all the players on the team, Kobe White has the highest trade value. At the age of 24, 18.1 points per game. He could go to a contender, immediately be a six-man role, point off the bench, or even start. You know, so we'll see what happens with him, but I think you're going to have to make a decision on him. We all know that Acme doesn't like players from the previous front office.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting decision because it is approaching quickly.
Vooch, what would you give Vooch so far for this year?
Yeah, I have to. I mean, nothing less than an A for Vooch because he has, again, like I mentioned earlier, I mean, he's done a night and day turnaround of what performance he was really putting on the court. I mean, Vooch being able to get his shot back from the 3-point line, also just being, to me, much more decisive with the shot inside the arc as well. He's still going to have his moments where he's going to do back to the basket ISO, but I feel like he's, and just from what I've observed, I feel that Vooch is more efficient in what he is doing with the ball inside the paint as far as moving it. And I wrote a column for Bulls on Tap, even the two Orlando games that the Bulls have had. What has been interesting is seeing Vooch being able to function in sort of like a staple set from the Golden State Warriors where, you know, we've been able to have Vooch running post-split actions, which, you know, that's something that, I mean, if anybody's watched Warriors games in their dynasty run, I mean, usually you have Draymond in that post being able to make those reads and just keep the ball moving. And I know, you know, the philosophy for the Bulls this season is, you know, run and gun and get the three-pointers up and be in fast break. But there's some value in what I believe there's truly some long-term value in, like, if the Bulls can lean on some of that half-court, some of that half-court set type offense a bit more, because I think that's what's going to be necessary just to, like, help smooth out these ups and downs in the offense where it's feast or famine right now. But when you have some possessions where you can just get into something that's going to, like, get guys organized and get the ball moving to the best possible shot. Like, that's what this team is missing right now. They obviously we used to have with DeMar DeRozan.
He's the most improved player in the NBA. I don't even think it's close. I mean, for him to be at, in terms of effective field goal percentage, at 66.4, I mean, it is night and day from where he was. He's shooting 47% from three right now. He was 29% last year. That is it's hard to describe that kind of change. You literally went from one of the worst three-point shooters in the NBA to one of the best in 1 year, one offseason. So it is a miracle what this guy is doing. It is a gift from God that this guy now has become an asset in the trade market and you have to move him as soon as possible. Going through his 85% from the free throw line, like, his numbers are insane and how good he's been on the offensive end. His defense is, you know, still a travesty, but it doesn't matter when you're playing this good offensively. I don't care what you do in the defense end, as long as you rebound like this. And to me, like, I've been getting a lot of heat, you know, like, oh, you were the biggest food trader. Yeah, because he sucked last year. He was awful. He was absolutely awful last year. So when he plays great, I'm going to say yes. And that's my frustration. He's getting all this, oh, you got to give him credit for working so hard this offseason. Well, where was it the previous offseason? Like, do you know how much better the Bulls would have been in the past 3 years if Vucevic had been shooting over 40% from three? Just that metric alone pulls out bigs. It would have created massive opportunities for DeRozan and Zach and Kobe White and Io to attack the rim. Nobody was guarding that guy at the three-point line in the last 3 years. No one. He was left wide open, and he shot it at 29% rate, which was an absolute embarrassment. And that's why the Bulls got him. It was high volume. He was shooting 40%, over 40% with the Magic. And somehow this season he surpassed his prime. This is the best year he's ever had. He should be the most improved player in the NBA, and we should get something, some type of draft assets for him. So he gets an A+ from me, definitely. Io, let's move on to Io.
Yeah, so with Io, with I gave Io a B- up to this point. The thing, so what is interesting, like, aesthetically or like the eye test, Io looks fine. But the thing that's interesting is Io's advanced numbers on his defense, they look like they're dropping off. And I call that out, not necessarily as like, I don't think that's an indictment that Io is doing worse defensively. And what I mean by that, so Io's defensive box plus minus metric this season, he is at a -1 box plus minus. And so just to like quickly like contextualize that for folks, you know, average box plus minus number is 0. Like, that's average, league average. So, and I also caveat that defensive box plus minus is considered to be a noisy metric. So by itself, it's not like a source of truth, but it is, at least to me, I view that as a signal to look at like what's going on with Io's defense. At least like that's kind of where my head's at. And that's why I'm giving him the B minus, because in his previous three seasons, he's been close to, you know, 0. And actually his second season is probably his best defensive box plus minus, where he's plus 0.6 on that. It's just something to keep an eye on. And then obviously, like, I think it sticks out to me just because this entire Bulls roster defensively is just, it's painful to watch them. And you would at least expect that Io is sort of like stemming, you know, like, you know, giving some triage there on defense. But even like, it looks like even Io's not like above sort of the defensive woes here. So that's something that I'm paying attention to this season. I'm hoping that like maybe it's just an early season start kind of thing, and Io will find like a more aggressive form with his defense.
Interesting comments, because I had Io in Nay. I love, to me, on the offensive end, I've loved everything I've seen from, with the exception of he's shooting 32% from three. That's going up, and I think will be continue to be on an upward trajectory. Like, offensively, I think he's been absolutely fantastic at pushing the pace, attacking the rim, shooting over 50% from the field, despite shooting 32% from three on four attempts per game, 82% from the free throw line. Like, and not only that, he's averaging, 4.6 assists. He's right up there with the league, with the team leaders outside of Giddy and Kobe. I think he's been awesome on the offensive end for the most part, outside of shooting. Defensively, I have noticed that a little bit, but a little bit of a fall off. But that said, you know, he doesn't have any rim protectors behind him. I feel like he's been still one of our better defenders. Like, he's getting the tougher assignments than anyone out there. With the possible exception of Williams, I'm a huge fan of Io. I felt like he should have been starting. I felt like the best direction for this team would have been just running forward with Kobe and Io as the backcourt for the next several years and on low dollars, and try to invest in your front court. And instead, the Bulls obviously chose another direction. So, you know what? I'm going to lower his A down to a B+ due to the defensive advanced stats that you've called out. But that said, I mean, he's an incredibly marketable player that I think any team in the league would want. To me, it's Kobe and Io, and it's not close in terms of trade value.
Yeah, and I should add, like, I completely agree with you, everything you said about Io's offense. I have no qualms at all about Io's offense. It's However, the thing is, like, I feel like if you were to just if you did like a blind survey of like 100 Bulls fans, people, like, Iowa has a well-regarded defensive reputation. So if a slip in that is something that, like, that's going to always make my eyes open. And, like, you know, that's the Bulls just can't afford for any sort of, like, slip in Iowa's defense, because they have no perimeter defense. They have no point attack defender. They just said, Oklahoma City, here, take our best defender and give us nothing other than Josh Giddey. So, yeah, the defense totally for Iowa is, like, that's his calling card, so that's got to be solid.
Patrick Williams, at the age of 23, just described as your so far as challenging, obviously hurt now. Hopefully coming back shortly. What say you about Patrick Williams, who obviously has not had a stellar season in 15 games?
It is, yeah. So Pat's season is challenging to say the least, and I think Pat, more than anybody else on this roster right now, probably is the most nuanced conversation to have about, like, how is he doing? What does his performance look like right now? Because there's just, like, these dynamics in play. I mean, the injury, the latest injury is in the mix. I also do question, did he ever really fully recover from the season-ending injury he had last year? Because he hasn't looked like anything remotely close to sort of like the average Pat, which I feel like, pun unintended perhaps. But, I mean, that, you know, he's an average offensive player. Like, and I wrote in the Bulls on Tap season preview, like, you know, all these people after Pat signed that extension saying, like, now Pat's got to prove himself. I don't think he has anything to prove. I think he is who he is. He's, you know, respectfully, I'm saying this, like, he's just a average NBA role player at this point. His numbers, that's what his numbers have said through his four seasons. And I have no expectations that there is some sort of, I had no expectations before Pat became injured with this foot inflammation that, like, there's going to be some massive step up in his offensive career. The thing I called out for Pat is, like, he just simply needs to be consistent and reliable in a single basketball attribute at this point. Like, he's not going to be a high-usage wing. I don't see that happening for him. I don't think he's a 20-game scorer ever for the foreseeable future. It's just, like, can you be a serviceable defender in whatever minutes you get? And, you know, bail out the team with a three-pointer if it gets to the end of the clock. That, like, to me, that's the modest expectation I have of Pat right now. So for me, even with that, you know, I still give Pat a C. I get that, like, you know, he's injured and he's had these injuries and it's nagging him. But even still, like, there's just more that you expect from Pat, you need from Pat because of the nature of what today's NBA is. The wing is the high value position, and you just can't have wings that are, like, giving you triple singles.
He's shooting 39.4% from three. He's always at that around 40%. Huge value in that today's game, especially from a guy who's playing the four, essentially three or four. But he's 9.9 points. I mean, like, he is what he is. This is what this kid has been. Is extremely disappointing. He's not a and disappointing in terms of being an alpha and a difference maker. I think you're exactly what you said. He is a role player, and there is value in that. And I think, you know, that's why you just hope that he continues to get better defensively. That's where I've been disappointed. And I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's coming off an injury, and I just don't think he's looked that good defensively. Or anywhere near where I expect him, or we should all expect him to be at. But, you know, again, coming off an injury, you know, as far as, like, being a guy who's going to even approach 20 points, he's never done that. Like, people have parades when he's done it. Probably you can count on one hand the amount of times he scored 20 or more in the past 2 years. Like, it's insanity how people, like, lower the bar for this guy. He's a very good three-point shooter who can defend. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's value in that. That's what he is. He shouldn't have been the fourth overall pick. All that was a mistake. I thought the contract he received was ridiculous. They should have played hardball like the Cavs did with Isaac Okoro. Yeah, but we didn't do it. I'm just going to, you know, at 23, I just hope he stays healthy and continues to improve defensively. And I will say also, in one area I have seen him improve is in his passing. Like, I thought he was a horrific passer for the first 2 years, 3 years. He's done a lot better this year. I mean, again, his assist numbers, he's averaging 2.3, but it's better than where it was. So I'll give him a C. C, what am I talking about? C minus. But overall, I expect better things as long as he could stay healthy.
Yeah, that's he's got to be healthy. That's really what it amounts to.
Got time for one more, and then maybe we can have you on again to finish this up or again soon. Josh Giddey. What's your grades for Josh? 22-year-old Josh Giddey, a flashpoint for the fan base. I don't even know where we're going to go with this one. What say you? He's down to 31% from three, by the way. So all that talk about he's right where he belongs, I guess. What say you about Josh Giddey?
Mark Eversley. Josh Giddey plays exactly how we want to play. That's going to be a long time quote from Mark Eversley. So the thing with Giddey, and I have to disclose my, give my disclosure statements up front about Josh Giddey. I've been critical about the move ever since the trade happened. I have not been a believer in Josh Giddey. I frankly am not even optimistic that Josh Giddey belongs on this roster by the end of the season. That said, to be fair to him, we know his defense is just it's bad, and there's just no other way to put it. There are positive things that Josh Giddey contributes on the offensive end, and he has shown flashes of I'm not going to discount him in any kind of way on the offensive side. Like, he has shown flashes of brilliance for sure with what he's been able to do passing the ball, moving the ball in transition. And to be fair to him, I see him challenging himself with his three-point shot and at least making a good faith effort to attack the rim. He's not particularly effective in either of those parts of the game right now, but he is putting forth the effort. So in that regard, my grade for Josh Giddey from what I've seen so far, I see him as a C- as well. And it's like a different kind of color of we were just talking about Pat. Like, Pat's C- to me is because you're not getting anything on any kind of level consistently from Pat. The thing I give Josh Giddey a C- because it's just too volatile right now. He gets the triple-double finally. Then you get a lot of these games where it's like these near triple-doubles that everybody, I'm not going to say everybody, but I just feel like that's a thing where it's like, that's really something to celebrate. Like, if he gets a triple double, cool, but I'm not going to get excited because, he's two rebounds shy of a triple double, but we lose. Like, to me, it's like, I would like to see Josh Giddey be reliable in something as well. He just, like, the box score thing, it's one of those things where people can point to the numbers and say these numbers are something, like, it kind of, I just feel like Giddey continues to gets this inflated sort of sense of like what his value is to the Bulls. However, like, if Giddey, to me, it all comes down to, like, Giddey either has to become a league average 3-point shooter, or Giddey has to be able to find a niche for himself in defensive contributions to, like, warrant any sort of, like, view of him as something other than also an average NBA role player.
My co-pilot Doug Tonis kind of hit on it. Like, he's got to bulk up, and he's got to play, like, defend fours or threes. He's big enough height-wise to do that. He's just not any – he's never going to be have enough lateral quickness to guard, you know, really good ones through threes. And he is so bad defensively. Like, I don't want to – everything I said in the summer, and I agree with you, I was fine with the trade if they would have had another draft asset attached to it. The fact that they just traded straight up is a – it is front office malpractice. It's so appalling. Everything I said was true in the summer. But that said, I do like a lot of his game. He is a freaking incredible passer. Some of his passing is great. There's no doubt about that. We all knew this, though. This was the whole comment. There's value in his great passing, and there's value in him as a rebounder. But defensively, he's worse than I expected. Like, I think it's the worst defending I've seen from a perimeter player. I can't remember a Bull that I've been more frustrated with on the defensive end. And I kind of, you know, anytime I highlight it, I could highlight it every game, but, you know, people, the Giddeyites out there just start jumping all over me. You know, but that said, I would not be against re-signing Josh Giddey for $15 to $20 million a year. I think he's a role player. You got to put him in I think he's optimized, like, leading a unit off the bench with a bunch of good defenders who attack the rim. I think that's where I think I could see this guy being. But you got to have somebody behind him who can protect the rim, because it's just like a turnstile on the defensive end. So the other thing about him, too, like, he started out the year getting to the free throw line. Well, now he's down to 2.3 attempts per game, and he's shooting the free throws at 69%. Like, that's not acceptable, like, for a guard. It's just, that's this guy's game. You either got to be like Luka, where you can, he's big enough, like, to get, tall enough to get in the lane and draw fouls and get to the line. And he's just not able to do that with consistency. And, but then again, you know, Morris, he's 22. Like, so where could he be in 3 years? Who knows? You know, he seems like a good kid. I love the interview he had with KC. I thought that was really entertaining. But I'm not paying this guy $25 million or more. I'm just not. He's not worth that. But I also don't want to see him walk for nothing.
Yeah. To be honest, I wouldn't have an issue if Acme let Giddey walk this summer. And I'll tell you why. I mean, because it comes full circle, right? What is the more costly move? Letting Giddey walk for nothing, or you overpay him, and then all of a sudden, you know, the Acme special happens again, where like 5 months later, oh, the Bulls are open to trading Josh Giddey. Guess what? Nobody wants him. Same way nobody wants Pat. People are barely kind of shaking their head about Vooch, in spite of like an all-star performance right now, because the price point is not what the market wants. So I have real concerns about Acme extending Giddey, because I don't know if they're going to do it in a smart way where they give themselves options for like escaping the Giddey contract, if that's what they want to do.
Tell us where everybody can find you. We love having you on the show. Thanks for joining the Big Red Bus. Where can people find you and read your work and listen to you talk Bulls?
Absolutely. So, you can find all my written work at Bulls on Tap. We're on X at Bulls on Tap. You can also find me personally on X at MoBanks10. That's MoBanks10. I also just got on Blue Sky, which should be MoBanks10, Blue Sky something or other. But if you go on my X account, you'll find how to get me on Blue Sky as well. And then I'm also on Instagram recently with MoBanks10.bball. So that's where you can find me. Definitely, again, check out all our great work at Bulls on Tap. Again, we're running a daily newsletter. We got a lot of great insightful written content. And we also have the Bulls on Tap podcast back, hosted by Derek and Melissa. So that's where you can find me.
Morris, I love your work. I love your work on X. I think you're just like me. You're right 93% of the time. I'm always nodding my head saying that's a brilliant insight. You got to follow you on X. Great stuff.
Appreciate it.
Until next time, let's go Bulls.
Okay, go Bulls. Thanks.